The goddamn balls. See how they like it.
Their balls? Paul wondered. What's he talking about?
Get 'em before they get me, Gregory muttered darkly. Only way to do it. He lapsed into incomprehensible mumbles again. Then he put the old-fashioned glass down with exaggerated care and transferred the gun to his right hand. He studied it for long moments, breathing heavily, mouth hanging open. Paul thought he might have been having trouble focusing his eyes.
Get 'em before they get me, he repeated thickly. This gun's my protection and my insurance policy. Make sure they can't hurt me anymore. Protect myself.
Suddenly, Gregory's eyes blazed with fury, and he swung the gun madly. The picture abruptly went dead. For several seconds, no one said a word. They all stared at the blank screen. At last, Arnold spoke up.
Oh, that's it.
Paul pulled his eyes away from the screen and saw that Greg was staring at him accusingly. It's pretty much of a jumble, Joanna said, disengaging her hand from Paul's. Is that the original disc or the enhanced version?
That's the enhancement, Arnold replied.
The original's in a bank vault, Greg said tightly, with orders to turn it over to the police if anything should happen to me. Joanna gave her son a pale smile. Isn't that just a trifle melodramatic? Paul could see that Greg's hands were trembling slightly. No, it's not melodramatic, Mother, he answered. It seems very likely that someone murdered my father. Whoever did it, he shifted his gaze toward Paul, might try to kill me to keep this disc out of the hands of the authorities.
That's stupid, Paul snapped.
I don't think so. In the first place, Paul said, the disc doesn't show anything except that Gregory was blind drunk and had a loaded pistol in his hand.
And felt his life was in danger, Arnold added.
He said someone was killing him, Greg said, still staring at Paul. He felt betrayed.
Paul started to retort that Gregory was an expert on betrayal, but decided it would only make the situation hotter, so he bit it back.
Are you saying, Joanna asked her son, her voice tense, strained, that Gregory committed suicide because he felt betrayed?
Greg turned molten eyes to her.
I'm saying that my father was frantic, that his feelings of betrayal drove him to drink.
Then he must have started feeling betrayed 20 years ago, Paul snapped.
And after he passed out from drinking, Greg went on, glowering, someone slipped into his office, put that gun in his mouth, and pulled the trigger.
Bullshit, Paul growled.
Joanna asked, who are you accusing, Greg?
We all know who stood to gain the most from my father's death.
Paul couldn't have done it, Joanna said, so calmly that Paul wondered how she could control herself so well.
Why not?
Because he was here with me that afternoon, she said, her voice low but firm. We spent the afternoon in bed together. That's where I was when the phone call came through. Greg's face went white with rage. So if you think that Paul murdered your father, Joanna continued, then you're going to have to blame the two of us. I can't prove that we were here that afternoon. I obviously didn't want the servants to see us together.
I don't believe you, Greg said. You're trying to protect him.
Almost triumphantly, Joanna said, if Paul murdered your father, then I helped him. Go to the police with that.
You were sleeping with him, Greg accused. You betrayed my father.
Your father betrayed me 100 times and more, Joanna said, her voice edging higher. Paul was the only consolation I had.
Paul and who else? Greg snarled. How many other men have you?
Paul jumped to his feet and leaned across the coffee table to haul Greg up by his lapels.
That's enough. You'd better shut your mouth.
Greg pulled free, glaring pure hatred. Bradley Arnold, never moving from his place on the sofa, smiled and raised his hands soothingly.
Gentlemen, Arnold said, please. Let's not allow our emotions to get the better of our judgment.
For a long moment, Paul and Greg stood confronting each other, the coffee table between them. Greg, tall and slim, Paul, a solid welterweight.
Sit down, both of you, Joanna commanded. Please, Arnold said. Let's try to keep this on a civilized plane.
Paul took his place beside Joanna again. Greg sat down next to Arnold. Paul saw that Melissa looked alarmed, frightened.
"If we had wanted to go to the police," Arnold said, "we would have done that days ago."
"We?" Paul's ears perked up. Arnold said we.
"The reason I set up this meeting," the board chairman went on, "was to try to come to some sort of understanding about all this. Keep it in the family, so to speak."
"Then why is she here?" Joanna asked, gesturing toward Melissa.
"She's with me," Greg said. "If it hadn't been for Melissa these past few weeks, I think I would have gone off the deep end."
"You're already in over your head, kid," Paul said to himself.
"Now, now," said Arnold. "Let's try to be reasonable and come up with a solution that makes some sense."
"I don't see where the problem is," Paul said. "Gregory committed suicide. That's all there is to it."
"He was murdered," Greg insisted sullenly. "Then show your pissin' disc to the cops and see what they make of it." "No," Arnold boomed. His deep voice seemed to make the heavy window drapes flutter. "We should settle this among ourselves."
"Settle it how?" Joanna asked.
"Greg will refrain from showing this disc to the board of directors."
"Refrain?" Paul snapped. "He's got no business showing that disc to anybody."
Arnold shook his head disappointedly. "Paul, I'm sure you understand that even though the disc may not constitute the kind of evidence the police could use, it would certainly look very bad for you in the eyes of the board members."
"Especially," Melissa pointed out softly, "with Joanna's alibi for you."
Paul sank back on the sofa cushions. "You sons of bitches are going to use this disc to drive a wedge between me and the board?"
"You can resign," Greg said. "Just quit and leave the company, and I won't have to show the disc to anybody."
"Resign?" "You have a golden parachute," Arnold pointed out. "You won't be hurting financially."
"Quit the company?
Is that all you want?"
"No," said Greg. "There's one additional thing you'll have to do."
"What's that?"
"Divorce my mother."
Paul got to his feet again, slowly this time.
"This meeting's over," he said through gritted teeth. "There's the door, Greg. Get out."
Still sitting, Greg looked up at him sullenly.
"You can't throw me out. This is my house."
"Not anymore." Greg's eyes widened and he looked past Paul to his mother.
"I live here, too."
"Get out," Paul repeated, pronouncing each word distinctly. "You can send somebody over to clear out your things later. Now get out of here before I throw you through a window."
Greg shot to his feet. "Mom, are you going to let him do this to me?"
"I think it would be best," Joanna said. "We obviously can't live under the same roof anymore."
"Not now."
"You're letting him throw me out of my own house?"
Greg's voice climbed an octave higher.
"You have your apartment in New York, don't you?"
"But this is my home."
Arnold lumbered to his feet. "Come on, Greg, you can stay at my house until you find a place here in Savannah." The old man pulled at Greg's jacket sleeve.
Looking bewildered, hurt and angry at the same time, Greg let himself be led away toward the door.
Melissa stood up.
"For what it's worth," she said softly, "I told him this would happen."
Then she left, too.
Lev Brudnoy. He was a goodwill ambassador or a con man, a free spirit or a pariah, depending on your point of view. Lavrenty Alexandrovich Brudnoy was a trained fluid dynamicist who somehow managed to wangle a job as a life support engineer at the ill-starred Russian facility called Lunograd, and then go on to become its most famous or infamous emissary. The Russians had placed their base at the giant crater Aristarchus, up in the area where Mare Imbrium and Oceanus Procellarum merge, nearly 1,000 miles northwest of Moonbase. Like Moonbase, Lunograd was originally heavily subsidized by the Russian government. After years of supporting the primitive base as basically an outpost for scientific research and further exploration of the moon, Moscow decided, long before Washington did, to spin off the base to private enterprise. While Masterson Aerospace Corporation operated the American moon base under government contract, NPO Lunograd, the corporation hastily formed to run the Russian base, sought investors all over the world. Few were willing to risk their money on a lunar base.